And now, the Great American Folk Show, a little place where we commune with you to share stories and sing some songs and talk to some good people with great voices. You know, we don't always have a theme, but sometimes a theme just sort of presents itself. And I'd say the theme of today is best summed up as following your own thread. We have Cynthia Burgett, a Buffalo, North Dakota artist with an inventive lyrical style. Her Made in Montana tune is a total gem, and so was her North Dakota Rose. Both of these tunes you're going to hear on the show today. Also, Empty Melon joins us, born in Montreal's thriving DIY indie music scene. And Avery Hellman, otherwise known as Ismay, talks about their documentary, Finding Lucinda. It's all about finding Lucinda Williams. I think you're really going to enjoy it. I'm Tom Brousseau. It's great to have you with us today. We begin with Gracie and Rachel, who play chamber pop music and whose new album, If We Could, Would We?, is available on Righteous Babe Records, which is a cool label. Anything that they release, I'm into. And I'm also interested in the genre that Gracie and Rachel play, and they do it so well. On the show in the past, we've had other bands representing chamber and baroque pop. It's an interesting combination, pop and baroque. The sound goes back to the 1960s when studio producers such as Burt Bacharach and George Martin were getting creative in the studio, often using strings and brass to support the day's new pop sound. Here's Gracie and Rachel now with their tune, Caroline.
Looking for Hi, we're Gracie and Rachel, and we are an indie duo from Berkeley, California, originally based in New York City. We've been in New York for the past long while, but prior to that, we were both born and raised in Berkeley, California, and we met in a high school dance class out there. Our dance teacher, Ms. Carr, we'll give her a shout out. Love you, Ms. Carr. She asked the class, she said, who in this class is a musician? And we were the only two people in the class that raised our hands. She said, okay, I think you should make the live music for this dance that we're going to do. And we were kind of bummed because we were like, we want to dance. We have no interest in making music in this class. We make music outside of dance class. But yeah, in that sense, it was sort of an arranged marriage. We were assigned to make this music, and we went home. We walked back to my place, my parents' place, Gracie here speaking. And we started composing this music, and then we realized that we really enjoyed doing it. And so then we started to do it on purpose, on our own accord. And we started entering open mics and traveling around. My mom would take us to these open mics all over, you know, parts of the Bay Area. And we started to win some of them. And that was exciting. And we're both very competitive. So that helped our egos. And yeah, we just kind of went from there. We went to separate music schools for undergraduate and reunited in New York City. So that's kind of the beginning. And now we'll say more.
Drifter, don't know how to stay, but I won't know how to miss ya if I go away. And I don't wanna talk about it all, 'cause I don't have a say. Yeah, making all the plans and all me to go away.
You just heard a live session with Gracie and Rachel. I'm Tom Brusso. This is the Great American Folk Show. I'd like to spotlight a musician who currently lives in Buffalo, North Dakota, not too far outside Fargo, heading west. Her name is Cynthia Burgett, and she has an interesting story in connection to the Peace Garden State. Her parents are from here, and once upon a time, she spent countless days and countless nights touring the area with a local band called the Continentals, in addition to being a solo artist. She wrote her first poem at the age of 14, and I suspect that since then she searched for a way to find her creative community. As she told me over the phone recently, while living in California as a kid, she was too young to be a hippie and too old to be a teeny bopper. As a result, she's followed her own creative thread and matured that way, and this is reflected in her unique songwriting ability. Her tunes are catchy and fun, but something more that I recognize in her work is her natural tendency to think outside of lyrical pop constructs. I think she's very inventive, so I have a great feeling that you're going to enjoy the songs that I have picked out today for you to listen to. These were all recorded and written by Cynthia Burgett. These songs are North Dakota Rose, Montana Made, and then this really beautiful one entitled Mail Order Bride.
To whom my heart goes. lives where the North Red River flows. My dearest love blooms in its valley. But as I reach for this flower, my heart can be found in the grass where the petals have scattered to the ground. For he grows in the prairie without a soul around, and his heart is of stone and beats not a sound.
I've tasted the freedom of the wilderness and filled my lungs with life's sweet, precious air. On top of a mountain, I've cried all alone when the beauty was too much to bear. And I've been teased by the essence of life and never have captured its charms. Now your touch gives me eyes to foresee tomorrow with my soul cradled in your arms. Now the best times to feel are with you. Montana made this dream come true. I love to go out where I smell the campfire in your hair. Oh, the best times I feel are with you. A man needs to visit the outdoors. He finds strength in the song of a stream. The river can purge one of needless concerns and replenish the heart with a dream.
Yes, I have been teased by the essence of life and never have captured its charms. Now your touch gives me eyes. I can see tomorrow with my soul cradled in your arms.
Now how the best times to feel are with you. Montana made this dream come true. I love to go out where I smell the campfire in your hair. Oh, the best times to feel are with you. Oh, the best times to feel are with you. Oh, the best times to feel are with you. Oh,
there's nothing in this world, I would trade
for my dream.
Montana made.
You are listening to the Great American Folk Show. Thank you for that today. My name is Tom Brusseau. We continue with great voices and welcome Empty Melon, a duo who, like our last guest, Cynthia Brigette, follow their own thread, mixing electronic vibes with stringed instruments to create something fresh and ethereal. And by definition, this first tune, Hoping to Find, is just that. The moment I first heard it, I began to have a little daydream about my kids playfully running on the open summertime prairie. What fun it is to be so free. Empty Melon joins us now.
The best things in life are drive-through. Convenience. is key. Posing our hopes and wishes to be answered with 180-second exchange. May I please end world hunger, systemic poverty. Take back the spiteful words I said last Wednesday. Last Wednesday, when you double crossed me. Another chance to make you believe in me, and that I'm capable of something lovely. As the day turned to night, I saw the stars in your eyes. Then you spoke me with a little hesitation. I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry, ma'am. We just serve food.
Support for the Great American Folk Show comes from the Lorac family, the estate of Blair Flegel, and Minn Kota Power Cooperative, helping meet the electricity needs of rural member cooperatives in eastern North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. Our power is our people. More information at minnkota.com. You know, I love to listen to music of all kinds, and lately, it's been under one roof, the UCSB, that's Santa Barbara, Cylinder Audio Archives. You can find them online. They're an online service. You can listen to pretty much any genre of music and learn about genres that you never even heard of before. Lately, I've been interested in the instrument, the zither, and lo and behold, at the UCSB Cylinder Audio Archives, there are plenty of zither tunes to choose from. What is a cylinder recording, you might be asking yourself? Well, it's how we used to record things back in the day, over 100 years ago. And while it might take some adjustment to get used to listening to these old-time recordings, I guarantee you the beauty that is encapsulated on them will provide you an enjoyable listening experience. And certainly the two that I've chosen for you today, I think are going to knock your socks off. So here are my discoveries. This first tune is a zither tune. It's by Kitty Berger, and it's called The Ring and the Rose. And the second one I've chosen for you, it's an old hymn, one of my favorites, entitled I Love to Tell the Story, which I first heard back in the 90s on a soundtrack to the movie The Apostle. And I've been searching for an early recording of it for a long time. This one comes from 1913, and it is performed by the Edison Mixed Quartet.
Thank you.
Musician Avery Hellman, whose recording name is Ismay, was on the show a couple years ago supporting their new album, Songs of Sonoma Mountain. Beautiful record. Much has happened since then, including a documentary they starred in involving a journey to discover what made Lucinda Williams, Lucinda Williams. It's called Finding Lucinda. It's quite enjoyable. In fact, I've seen it four times.
The infamous tape vault.
Ooh, got Lucinda.
There we go.
She had all these original songs.
I can't see.
You're the only person she shared these with. I struggle more, like, maybe than she did with that sense of being needed.
Here we are all these years later, she's still at it.
Yeah, she just didn't give up. I think I've gotten my answers in so many different versions of what to do about my self-doubt and uncertainty from everybody but her.
Lucinda Williams is one of America's greatest songwriters, hitting high acclaim in the 1990s with her album Car Wheels on a Gravel Road.
Told me, baby, one more time. Don't make me sit all alone and cry while it's over. I know it, but I can't let go. I'm like a fish out of water, a cat in a tree. You don't even want to talk to me while it's over. I know it, but I can't.
In the documentary, Avery not only visits sacred locations where Lucinda Williams cut her teeth, such as recording studios and bars and even an old spaghetti hall, but some of her past compatriots, such as Charlie Sexton and Mary Gauthier and Buddy Miller. Eventually, they visit with Lucinda Williams herself, and the two have a very heartwarming and inspiring conversation. I encourage you to see it. It's called Finding Lucinda. Avery Hellman joins us now to talk about the documentary, about their music, and about their connection to the bluegrass music scene.
Here upon these desert cracks I'm born, right beside the faded tracks, waiting for storm.
Avery, it's so great to have you back on the show.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be here. You know, I listen to your show all the time. It's one of my favorite shows, and that's saying a lot because I listen to shows every single day, and I just love your show. So,
how can it be that it's only these hills?
Avery, you have done something with your life. A lot of investing of your own life, and that was to create this documentary, Finding Lucinda. And I just love it. It's a journey of finding yourself, your own grit and worth as a songwriter, but through the life of Lucinda Williams. How did you first discover her music?
Well, somebody said the other day that Lucinda Williams, they think, is like a poet whose work is set to music. And I think that's something I uncovered to be very true. She is, you know, an incredible alt-country singer-songwriter whose work has been celebrated since, I don't know, the 1970s really when it started. But I think that she is one of those artists like a Leonard Cohen where the deeper you dive into their work, the more rewarding it is. And her work is truly stand out across the decades that she has been performing. And, you know, the way I got started getting interested in Lucinda, when I was a kid, we listened to Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. That was a big album in the 90s. But, you know, I don't know if I gave it a second or a third thought. There are lots of artists that I love, you know, Tom Waits, all these kinds of people. And then my dad asked me when I was about 23 years old, he said, "Hey, I'm starting a Lucinda Williams tribute band. Do you want to be in it?" And I was like, "Sure, I need to get better at singing and playing guitar. Why not? I don't have that many gigs." And that's how I started on this journey of coming to love and understand Lucinda Williams' work and then set out to uncover her origins.
Wow. So you literally got to know her music by playing it at the suggestion of your father. And your father was in this band. Who else was in this Lucinda Williams covers band?
So at the very beginning, we had a couple potential folks and some people who were a bit busier. Like I was hanging out with my friend Chuck Prophet, a wonderful artist from San Francisco, and some other people. And we were kind of trying things out. And it ended up being my dad and myself, bassist Joshua Zucker, Dave Zerbell, a pedal steel player. And it was really fun. We played in bars all around the San Francisco Bay Area. But eventually, even though that was really fun, after a couple of years of doing that, I got a little bit tired of trying to scream into the microphone so people could hear me in these dingy bars. And I said, let's do something else.
Everybody's had a few. Now they're talking about who knows who. I'm going back to the Crescent City where everything's still the same.
There's a wonderful part in this documentary where you discover that document of her father writing a letter to her teacher, telling her teacher, please excuse Lucinda from having to memorize a certain poem because the poem was just a bad poem. Do you have any sense that there have been other people who have done something like this to discover, like, the origins of Lucinda Williams?
You know, when we embarked on the process, we had an archivist, and I don't know how to pronounce that. Archivist? I don't know. Anyways, we found all these great old videos, and we had found that her father, because Lucinda's father, Miller, was actually a celebrated poet, after he passed away, a bunch of his old letters and old books and everything had been put into these archives at the University of Texas in Austin. And there was kind of this treasure trove of documents that I don't think really had been uncovered by very many people, because there was no documentary made about Lucinda's life by somebody else, because her biography hadn't come out, because nobody's written a biography about her. There just was a lot of information yet to uncover, and that's what we ended up doing. And finding out about this fascinating relationship that Lucinda had with her father, how he mentored her as a writer, and how she actually had a pretty remarkable and uncommon childhood. You know, her father was friends with Flannery O'Connor and Charles Bukowski and all these incredible American writers. And therefore, Lucinda grew up in this community of some of the best American writers being friends of friends and hanging out in her living room, and her father also being a great poet. So I really think there was actually quite a lot that wasn't fully understood that we were able to uncover through this project.
Baby, see how I've been living. Velvet curtains on the windows too.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Great American Folk Show. We're speaking with singer-songwriter and guitar player and movie maker Avery Hellman on Lucinda Williams. Quite an individual, this Lucinda Williams, and also quite a documentary that you made, Finding Lucinda. I found it to be enlightening, heartbreaking. I empathized as a songwriter myself what you were going through. I also love this aspect of the movie where it's not about Lucinda, it's about Avery and about who Avery is. And that's at least half of the documentary is you documenting sounds of nature, drawing plants, and taking the time as you probably normally would, writing songs out in nature. And I have to assume that you're a fan of nature, a lover of nature, because of your own upbringing in California.
Absolutely. I mean, basically everybody in Marin County is pretty much pagans at this point, right? No, I'm just kidding. But when I was growing up, we were very much given a lot of access to the outdoors, doing lots of camping trips. And I think it instilled a connection and a love for nature with me as a child, and made me, I don't know, maybe a little bit nature literate, which is nice. I feel very comfortable in that environment. And I think the filmmaker who made Finding Lucinda is sort of similar in his love for the natural world. And he really highlighted it as a filmmaker, as a part of who I am as a person. And I think even though it's a little more subtle, I think it's true in Lucinda's story too. You know, she is, as Charlie Sexton describes in the movie, or at least in the podcast, he described Lucinda as a regional writer, and there's something about the region of the American South that she came from and the natural environment there that's part of her story and part of her writing and part of the fabric that she makes her songs out of.
Oh, those boys in Lafayette, smiling so pretty, those sweet boys in Lafayette, they sure do. We danced all night long to a sweet Cajun song, drinking
until dawn.
Avery, there's a moment where eventually you are meeting with Mary Gauthier, and she is giving her thoughts about when she first discovered Lucinda Williams, and she said something that was really interesting. She says that when she first listened to her music, it destroyed her. And that can happen when you're listening to someone who just has that sense, that otherworldly, the ability of being able to do something. And there's a moment where you're recording at this place where Lucinda recorded at one point, and you're listening to some of the old tapes that they still have in the vaults. It seemed like you were being, in a way, kind of crushed by the greatness of your idol, kind of in the same way that maybe Mary was crushed when she first heard Lucinda's music.
Yeah, I think you're pointing to something really fascinating about the psychology of being an artist, is most of us get into being artists because we hear or see art that affects us profoundly, and we want a little part of that. We want to get into it. We want to, like, dig underneath the rock of whatever that is and just get it. And then, you know, when you start making your own art, you at times butt up against this comparison that is not helpful and it is not productive for creativity. And you have to find a way to love the work of another artist that inspired you, but to free yourself from that comparison, from the attachment to what they were, and become something entirely your own, and whatever that's going to be and whatever society thinks about that. I mean, that even happened for Lucinda. She was talking about Chrissy Hynde and how she had seen her and she wanted to be just like her, but she couldn't. And every artist, I think, goes through this psychological dynamic of wanting to replicate the work of somebody they really love, not being able to, and having to see if they're up to the challenge of stepping out and doing their own thing.
What did you learn from this process, finding Lucinda?
I think the biggest thing I learned from this project was that no matter how the world reacts to your art, you always have the opportunity to go back to the blank page and write another song. I think there's this myth that I started out with in my mind that's like, once I have a record deal, once I have a concert, once I have this or that, I'll feel good about myself and I'll know I'm a good writer and I'll feel great. But the fact is that when you commit yourself to art, you're committing yourself to those little bits of suffering that are involved with, you know, writing a new song or making a new album or performing in front of people. And I just realized that through Lucinda's story and through my own experience that you really only have control over your ability to commit to creating new art that's as honest as it can be. We don't get to choose where we end up. We don't get to choose how our voices sound. We can work really hard and be the best artist we can, but I think it's incredibly important for me as an artist to accept that we don't get to choose the outcomes, but we just get to choose the input and the love for the art. I'll say one thing that through working with lots of different people, the people who I've found are the most successful, when I step with them into a recording studio, what I find is they just turn back into little kids. The smile on their face to get to sit down and play a song is incredible. And I think that's what makes those people successful, you know, in terms of their life or whatever. I mean, whatever success really means. But I think the lesson to be learned is that we all have the opportunity to take joy in the process of playing music or creating art ourselves.
If Ismay's music, Avery Hellman's music, is new to you or Lucinda Williams, you cannot go wrong. It's a beautiful, beautiful journey and very well documented. Thank you so much, Avery, for being on the program. It's always a delight to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. I love your show. I mean, you got that real folk integrity in you, and it shows, so I'm glad to be part of it.
Just outside of Austin, there's a room I could get lost in. Open my eyes one day, make the miles back to LA. Yeah. Oh, it touches me like velvet. thinks I know the secret. Yeah, 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 yeah. I think I know the secret.
Oh, yeah.
And I gotta get to Austin tonight. He's sitting up in the moonlight. Wishing on a star. Moving his lips to the songs on the radio. I know, I know, I know I'm not the only one, but I have seen the evidence. Don't bother asking if it's love. I don't even have a question. No, because he kisses like the warm breeze through the cedar elm trees. Before we even hit the main street. Yeah, come on, baby. Take me in the back seat. Oh, oh, cause I gotta get to Austin tonight. He's sitting up in the moonlight. Wishing on a star. Moving his lips to the songs on the radio. Oh, move those lips for me, babe. I'm moving my hips for you, baby. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes, move those lips for me, baby. No, oh, oh, oh. I'm moving. He's moving his lips to the songs on the radio.
That's our show for today. We'd like to thank you for listening. We'd like to thank our guests. You just heard an interview and a special song sent in to us by Avery Hellman, otherwise known as Ismay. Also on the program, Gracie and Rachel, Cynthia Burgett from Buffalo, North Dakota. Thank you again, Cynthia, for being on the show. Empty Melon was on the program, and I spotlighted two of my favorite tunes, currently anyway, at the UCSB Cylinder Audio Archives. What fun is that? Opening theme by Sean Watkins in Los Angeles, California, and theme by Burkham Boys in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Mary Jones is the talent producer. Eric Dethridge is the producer and editor. Lizzie Rousseau helps out with the digital realm. Our sponsors again, the Lorac family, the estate of Blair Flegel, and Minkota Power Cooperative. My name is Tom Brousseau. May you always find that lucky old sun until we meet again.